countrywide on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Farmers Journal. Have you cattle to sell? Find out what they're worth with our marked price calculator on farmersjournal.ie. Countrywide on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Farmers Journal, bringing 295,000 readers the latest farming news and the best of rural Ireland weekly.
Good morning and welcome to the programme. Coming up between now and 9 o'clock, remembering a childhood growing up on an American farm. We find out why Easter demand for lamb is so high, how artificial light is smothering the dark at night, and what exactly is going on between Glanbia and its farmer suppliers.
Text 51551, email countrywide at rte.ie, and tweet at RTE Countrywide.
But first, many of you will know that we've been following events on the farm of Catherine Quinn and her granddaughter Hannah Quinn Mulligan in Limerick throughout the pandemic. Catherine has been cocooning for almost a year on the farm, but last week she left to get her first COVID-19 vaccination in what was a special day and an emotional day for both herself and Hannah.
Wouldn't you know, there'd be a guard at checkpoint just as on the day you're going to get your vaccine.
Yeah.
Oh, he says these are two suspicious characters now.
Yeah. It's the first time I've been stopped.
Is it the first time you've been stopped?
Yeah.
Hey, thank you. You must look like a good citizen,
yeah.
Granny. Is that really your first guard at checkpoint?
Yeah.
You haven't been?
I haven't been anywhere.
The sun is shining for it anyway. Is this where the doctor's is up here?
Yeah, the
cabinet
is fairly full, alright.
Hiya. Catherine Quinn.
Catherine Quinn. You can stay in the car, okay? We'll call you in once we're ready. Get some light reading there.
Thank you.
No homework.
I feel excited about you getting your vaccine. Are you excited about getting it?
I am excited, yes. I am. I'm very pleased and very very happy to be getting it. I think it's a good day, and the fact the sun is shining makes it even better. I hope when I get the next vaccination, which is next month, that we might be able to go for a road trip to Fenor and have a little drive around the Burren, and apart from that, just meeting my family and friends, and maybe in the summer to be able to go to some agricultural shows if they're going to be allowed to go
wheeling
ahead.
And dealing, that's essentially it, is it?
Well, just meeting old friends and people that I haven't seen for well over a year.
Has it been a little bit odd hearing your sisters, Auntie Margaret and Auntie Bidsey, over in England chatting to you about having their vaccines? And I mean, they're both younger than you.
It has. Well, it sort of makes me wonder, I suppose, what we're doing here.
Oh, here we go.
Catherine, do you want to grab a seat here? You'll be called in shortly.
I will, yes.
If you don't mind popping across the road and come back in about 25 minutes.
That's fine. I can do that. Okie dokie.
Okay.
Action stations.
Action stations. Okay.
Oh, here she is already. Hello, hello.
Hello, Emma.
That didn't take too long.
No, I've been let out.
You have to sit in the chair for 5 minutes or so. Got a water, a bottle of water, and sweets.
Cheating,
yeah. Really looked after. So well organised, and
And you feel fine?
Yes, I feel fine. Yes,
We've been cocooning together now for the last year, but it's flown, actually.
It has. But I think we'll feel safer. I'll feel safer. And hopefully you'll feel less worried, because I think you do get anxious at times. And I tend to forget. But, yeah.
So, yeah. It hasn't been a hardship, though. I know we hear lots of people on the radio and everything saying that it's been really tough, and I can see that. But, I mean, if it meant keeping you safe, I'd do it again in a heartbeat.
Yes. And it hasn't been that hard for us.
I think Uncle Sean's funeral was hard.
That was very hard. Yes. I lost my younger brother. He was... that has come as a big shock and really hard for me because of the memories of him as a child. And I was, you know, 10 years old when he, 10 or 11 years old when he was born. And then not being able to sort of even touch my nieces and at the funeral. So, yeah. I was thinking about him this morning and thinking that even the nurse giving the vaccination just said there that it's not before time. And she said really and truly that they had hoped to have had it a couple of months ago. And if he had had it a couple of months ago, he'd be alive today. So he must have become infected around the time of his birthday, which was the first week in January. And he was only barely 69 years of age and had only just retired. So it's very sad for all of us, but, and particularly for his wife and children.
Sad for you too.
Mm. Oh, it is. It is sad, yeah. It is very sad. I think of him, you know, go for days and I don't think too much about him, and then it hits. I think about him a lot, maybe in one particular day.
But the sun is shining today.
The sun is shining and today's a lovely day. Today's a good day, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Can we go home and see our cows?
Mm-hmm. I think we will.
And that was Catherine Quinn and her granddaughter, Hannah Quinn Mulligan, there. And the team here at Countrywide would like to extend our sympathy to Sean's wife, Margaret, and daughters, Mairead, Emer and Roisin, and indeed to Catherine and her siblings too. And that report there, in many ways, I'm sure, resonates with a lot of people in homes throughout Ireland this Saturday morning. Now, just to let you know that last week we were talking about farmers changing to organic farming methods, and it was a timely conversation given that the organic farming scheme is open to applicants until the end of April. Now, you may be interested to know that the Organic Trust is organising free information webinars on next Thursday and the following Thursday, that's the 1st and 8th of April, and you can get more information by texting organic to 51777 or on their website organictrust.ie. Now, as we look forward to the clocks going forward this weekend and longer days, scientists are concerned about the overall impact of artificial light in cities, towns, villages, and indeed in our own back gardens, and nature's natural rhythms and the effects on it. Next month, International Dark Sky Week will be celebrating dark skies and also alerting us to the issues of light pollution. Brian McEpsey is the Associate Professor in Trinity College Dublin, and he joins me to tell us more. Brian, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
So what is the trend here in relation to light pollution?
I've been looking at light pollution for about the last 11, 12 years, and we're finding an increase in light from Ireland. Most dramatically, it was leading up to the Celtic Tiger years. There was about a two-thirds increase between 95 and 2009. So what we're doing is actually blasting the general surroundings of the countryside so much that we can actually see that light from space. And the worry is that it's causing a knock-on effect in our environment, and the birds and the insects and even the bats. So with the changes, as was mentioned on the news, the worry about climate change, this may be an additional stressor that will cause a decline in further in species. So we need to protect our environment. And in the city environment, we need to look after our own health. I think we've all become aware with the COVID lockdown that, the rhythms of natural rhythms are disrupted. Well, light also disrupts the natural rhythms, the day-night cycle, and also the monthly changes in light that we all need to actually recharge our batteries. Yeah. The animals and plants need that as well.
Yeah, and in these lockdown times, we need to get out, and in order to be able to sleep properly at night, our eyes need to be attuned to the brightness of day to know the difference. So, but at the same time, we know the advantages of electricity and light, and as humans, we're all attracted to the big city lights. So how do we strike a balance?
Yes, that's a very important point. I'm a founder member of a group called Dark Sky Ireland, and what we're espousing is actually a more sensible use of light, rather than just turn all the lights off. With my background as an astronomer, I know what a really dark sky looks like, and I'm afraid we're losing that here in Ireland. But we really want to promote responsible light use. I think particularly with cheap LED lighting, now it is the case that people will maybe use a little bit more than they need, particularly around the countryside and, for instance, in farms, people's houses. We're seeing a growth of this light across the country where before it used to be concentrated around the towns and cities. So the only near pristine areas now are around Mayo and Kerry and down the west coast and a number of other locations throughout the country. And by protecting the environment, by people turning off light and realizing, you know, that it's another form of pollution, it's the only form of pollution we can fix by the switch, right? Just turn it off and it goes away. And it might take a while for the environment to recover, but it's something we can easily fix. And it saves us money. It's actually better for our environment. It's better for our health by not having light on all the time, particularly these glaring white LED lights. They have a lot of blue light, and in high enough intensities, it disturbs our indication of the day-night rhythm. So it doesn't actually let us adapt and relax then to the nighttime cycle. Again, that carries for animals as well.
Well, for any of us living near towns and cities, we think that, you know, the stars have maybe disappeared. We can only spot a couple of them. But of course, when you go to places like Ballycroy or indeed the Davos Dark Sky Park in County Tyrone, we can actually see, you know, the beauty of the night sky. So there is a lot of those places, only a few of them left in Ireland. But just before we go, just a reminder to us all then, what can we actually do maybe this week in particular or next week for the Dark Sky International Week to try and, I suppose, play our part?
Excellent. I think, you know, it's a question of one small change that we can all make. So what I'd recommend is particularly for outside lights, maybe farmyard lights or lights just outside your front door, you light only what is needed for the time it's needed and with the amount that's needed. And if you have a choice, then and look for warm white lighting, it's less disruptive to the environment. But, you know, just be aware that that light is going somewhere. A security light where nobody's watching is not a good use of electricity.
Or maybe
but we can gain.
Yeah, I was just saying that maybe as well, a lot of people have kept the Christmas lights going to try and lift their spirits in these tough times. So maybe after the clocks go forward tomorrow, maybe that is the time to finally switch off the Christmas lights. Listen, we're going to have to leave it there. But Brian, it's been lovely chatting to you, and we will come back to this subject again. And for information on events on Dark Sky Week, which starts on the 5th of April, go to eventbrite.ie, where the Friends of Mayo Dark Skies have listings of the events for International Dark Sky Week, as I said, from April 5th. Professor Brian McEpsey, thank you very much indeed. Well, American writer Ryan Dennis lives in Galway, and this month his debut novel, The Beasts They Turned Away, has been published by Epoch Press. It has been described by the Irish Times as a demanding debut, dense and dark, but ultimately rewarding in its strange beauty. Now, Ryan's from a family farm in upstate New York, and when he writes about it, there are echoes of farming indeed in this country. This is Field Names.
Each field had a name. My great-grandfather's horses grazed in the corral piece. Our old neighbor used to keep a few colonies in the beehive field. One plot was called the Lime Pile Field, because in the 60s, the county stored road supplies on its headlands. The lime pile was gone long before I was born, but still, I know the field's name. When my grandfather retired in 2008, half of our land was sold to one of the large farms nearby. Later, when my father could no longer make a living dairy farming, he rented his remaining fields to them. Now, every month or two, a parade of large equipment rolls into the small New York Valley I was born in. Heavy trucks barrel down our dirt roads all day, back and forth to the center of their operation miles away, silage flying out and settling on the shoulder. Then they are gone again. I doubt they are there long enough to make any memories or have any stories to tell. I don't know what they call the fields that used to be ours. My father asked for help in cleaning out my grandfather's shed after my grandfather quit farming. It was just the two of us, and we mostly worked in silence, dumping tools into 5-gallon buckets and carrying away old compressors and shed fans. He had worked with my grandfather all his life, each of them keeping separate herds, but sharing the land and machinery, so I knew that he saw things in the dusty artifacts that I did not. Before the day was over, he told me that cleaning out that shed was hard, and that was the type of thing he seldom said. At one point, we had to lift an old tractor door together. "You probably don't remember the John Deere this belonged to, do you?" he said. Then he told me about a day he dissed the beehive field as a young teenager when my grandfather started planting it. After a few hours, my grandfather eased his tractor to a halt and stopped to urinate next to the front tire. My father also pulled his parking brake and, looking to surprise him, threw a flat stone towards his father's feet. The stone curved through the air, hit my grandfather on the back of the head, and dropped him to his knees. As the story goes, my grandfather recollected himself and pulled up his pants. He immediately remarked, "I think I got some on my hands." I'd heard that anecdote a few times, but always enjoyed watching my father tell it. Ultimately, it is the story that holds the farmer to the family farm. Whether he was aware of it or not, my father placed himself inside a larger narrative every time he put his wellies on, and the way he negotiated that story was the way he understood himself. When struggling farmers are asked why they continue on, the answer is fairly universal. They don't know how to be anything else. They have their tales of rollaway wagons, memories of wet spots in each paddock, and field names that are not apparent to those who pass by. It is the narrative, in the end, that is lost in the transition from small to large farming. My grandfather has since passed away. My father is aging, and there may come a time when his memory will fail. When that happens, I know that it'll matter less that I've never seen the lime pile, as long as I'll be the next one to tell its story.
Field Names by Ryan Dennis, whose novel The Beast They Turned Away is available wherever you can buy your books these days. You're listening to Countrywide here on RTE Radio 1.
RTE Radio 1.
Countrywide on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Farmers Journal. Have you cattle to sell? Find out what they're worth with our March price calculator on farmersjournal.ie.
Yeah, there's lots of anger and shock among milk suppliers to Glanbia this week with news that from next year, they'll be penalised if they don't make an effort to reduce the flow of milk they supply during this peak supply period. To understand the significance of all of this, let's rewind. It's the 1st of April, 2015. EU milk quotas are lifted for the first time in 30 years. And James Bay is at number one in the Irish charts with Hold Back the River.
Trying to keep you close to me.
Farm organisations say that up to 10,000 new jobs could result from the abolition of EU milk quotas from midnight tonight.
The lifting of the quota regime means Irish farmers are given the freedom to expand and increase milk production to meet growing global demand.
The quotas, originally introduced for only a five-year period back in 1984, have held back an entire generation of farmers and milk processors from growing their businesses. Now, that is all about to change.
And there's collective enthusiasm from farmers to co-ops to politicians.
If you drive out of a city like Cork at the moment and you drive through Mallow, you'll see an 80 million euro investment by Dairy Gold. If you drive up to Charleville, you'll see a 60 million euro investment from Kerry. If you drive across to Mitchellstown, another 40 million euros by Dairy Gold. If you go to Moor Park in Fermoy, probably 30 million euros has been spent on dairy research.
And then head towards the southeast to Bellevue on the Kilkenny-Waterford border. A new 200 million euro state-of-the-art, Glanbia-owned milk powder plant the size of two Croke Parks.
As can I say, as Minister for Agriculture and Food, as far as I'm concerned, this is the most important and exciting development for rural Ireland that we've seen in a generation.
6 years on, an annual Irish milk supply has jumped from 5 billion litres to 8 billion litres. The value of dairy exports has doubled, with Glanbia now accounting for 35% of the total national milk pool. But now, the consequences of rapid growth? Supply is in danger of pushing capacity.
There's a very, very challenging development for Glanbia that we're trying to address at this point in time.
Due to planning issues around the building of a joint venture cheese processing factory at Bellevue, Glanbia has told its suppliers to curb peak time milk production from next spring or face penalties. Sean Molloy is Chief of Agribusiness Growth with Glanbia.
What we have set out in terms of our plans, and there's two main plans, Damien. First of all, we've announced a voluntary retirement scheme to try and free up some capacity. And secondly, we have announced a peak management policy proposal. It will be a challenge, but we intend to work with our farmers to try and address the bulk of this challenge. We have done everything that we possibly could, and also we have invested and committed to more investment internally in our current infrastructure to try and offset the majority of this challenge. It's important to say here that what we're doing is we're not putting a full stop on growth. We're actually accommodating growth, which will meet the demands of the bulk of our farmers. So this isn't a full stop on curtailing the growth ambition. And indeed, outside of the peak months of April, May and June, there is no restrictions on farmers who want to produce milk outside of that period. We see this as a temporary measure. We are fighting to address the challenge that's in front of us here. And once that challenge is addressed, it's our full intention to return to accommodating the growth that our farmers would like to supply into us as an organisation.
Yeah, I don't come from a farming background, and I suppose we're new entrants to farming and we're new entrants to dairy.
43-year-old father of two, Jamie Keeley, along with his wife Lorraine, milk 120 cows near Tullow in County Carlow.
But we got the opportunity here to go into dairying on this farm.
They were new entrants to dairying in 2014, starting out with 60 in-calf heifers, slowly building to where they are today.
This is a good dry farm, so we're able to have cows out grazing here on the 1st of February.
The Keeleys are one of 4,500 farmers supplying Glanbia. Jamie says the Glanbia proposal is unworkable.
We have no intentions of milking cows over the winter period. Our system here is a spring calving system where we're compact spring and we dry off roughly around the end of November. The first week of December we're gone dry, Damien. We're at the cow numbers that we wanted to be at now, and we did that over a period of time. But it had been said to us that we could grow this cow number quicker than we did, but we wanted to do this in baby steps, so that's the way we did. But we're actually at the cow number now, so what we're doing on this farm now, we're getting more efficient to put more cash in our pockets, basically. So calving our cows more compactly and putting milk out the gate earlier in the year. By putting no extra cow on this farm, we're actually taking a hit in our pockets. By being more efficient and pushing more milk out the gate in early spring, early lactation, we're actually going to get penalised for doing that now.
Certainly, Damien, this is a huge concern for our farmers who have invested in their farms, who have planned to develop their enterprises. And certainly this comes as a huge disappointment for them. Now, too, I suppose as an organisation, we have put in place plans to try and address the bulk of that challenge. But no doubt, Damien, this is going to come as a huge disappointment for a significant number of our suppliers.
Like, I've had delegates from America, from Denmark and from Germany on my farm, brought to me by Glanbia, showing cows out grazing. This is the picture that was sold to us. And we put it into action. We deliver the product that you want. We can't turn back the clock. Lads, you have to go back to the drawing board and relook at this.
Carlow Dairy farmer Jamie Keeley there, before that Sean Molloy of Glanbia. Well, earlier I spoke with Joe Patton, who's a dairy specialist with Chagask, and he first began by explaining how the process of dairy farming and milk production works in Ireland and why there is this peak milk season.
The process in Ireland, I suppose, is seasonal by nature. And I suppose anybody of your non-farming audience this morning that's looking out and thinking that they may need to get their lawn mowed for the first time this year will understand about grass growth and how grass growth is so seasonal. And I suppose in the Irish context, really grass growth dictates an awful lot of our system. So as a feed for cows in particular, grass is an excellent feed. It has great energy and protein and fibre and all the other nutrients needed. And because of that, then really over many years, what Irish dairy farmers have tried to do is to sort of synchronise their milk production to suit the seasonality of grass growth. So they do that by calving pretty much all of their cows in the spring of the year, so they're very busy at the moment, or just getting over the bulk of calving through February and March period. That results in a flush of milk then, I suppose, in April, May, June and into the summer. And as you move into the autumn, those cows start declining in milk production and finally then maybe to dry in December. So it's very much a seasonal system. There will be some farmers, obviously, that will calve cows in the autumn, and they will provide milk for the fresh milk market and for specialty products. But more or less, the bulk of the milk production happens in the summer, and the reason for that is very simply that it coincides with the flush of grass growth available to feed the herd.
And Glanbia are worried now that there will be an oversupply scenario next year, and they do not have the capacity to deal with this supply situation. So they've proposed to flatten the curve for 12 months' time. Why is this difficult for farmers to plan for now?
Well, it's quite difficult to plan for because really that, you know, we've seen this with farms over the years that have tried to change their milk supply profile, Damien, and it probably is a 3 to 5 year project to change it in the first place. So the reason for that is that you must manage the calving pattern of the herd, which takes a couple of years to change. You must change maybe how you manage your young stock. You must change how you manage, you change the entire sort of management structure of the farm. So supply profiles don't change overnight for sure. But then there is also the other issue that for even though supply profiles can be changed and technically can be changed, the other big issue, I suppose, for farmers is that does come at a cost to feed cost. It also comes at a cost to their own labour input. So it's probably more labour intensive to milk 365 days a year rather than do it in a seasonal way. As I said, the feed cost becomes higher. There's also possibly an environmental cost to it as well, and even a product quality cost. So, you know, while it's doable, and other countries for sure that don't rely on a grass-based system would have a much flatter curve than Ireland. But there's a reason why Irish dairy farmers have chosen to try and exploit grass growth, because it is for them the most profitable system. So it becomes a question of difficult to change in the short term, and also possibly moving into a less profitable scenario for them as well.
So what is your analysis, Joe? Is this workable, and what's the impact on suppliers going to be?
Well, it's a difficult situation for suppliers, Damien. To be fair, one of the things we have to remember also is that, you know, even for the suppliers who produce milk over the winter period, a lot of those guys will also produce quite a lot of milk in the summer period. So their quiet time is actually in September rather than in the summer, which does make it, you know, it does make it difficult, even more difficult then to flatten this supply curve. So really, if you were to do what it would be required, that would involve calving cows in May, June and July period, for when for most farmers, that would be coming into the time of the year when they're supposed catching their breath and looking forward to a quieter time on the farm. That would be one of the big issues. So this would not be an easy proposition at all for dairy farmers to try and achieve.
And of course, then they would be coming into a situation where there would be no grass growth, and they would have to feed more meal to the cows.
Yeah, absolutely, and that is an issue that when you do this, you would have to change the entire synchrony of the system away from being able to exploit that grazed grass, which does require then more concentrate feed, probably more reliance on imported protein sources, for example. And that all has implications in terms of the cost and also the product quality. And there was some very nice work done over the last number of years in Chagas Moor Park, actually looking at the product quality of grass-fed and grass-clover-fed milk versus milk produced from conserved feeds and concentrates. And, you know, there are health benefits to the milk produced from grass. It's got better quality in terms of the butter. The flavour of the butter is better. You know, it produces a softer cheese as well. So there are a lot of reasons why grass-fed is seen as a premium product. And to move away from it, the capacity to exploit that in the summer period is something that would, you know, create a lot of difficulties across the industry as a whole, I would think.
Well, Joe, finally, we're looking at a situation where the impact on the environment of dairy expansion is going to come into sharp focus on a number of fronts over the next 6-7 years. Is this the beginning of it? Is this the beginning of a quasi-return to a milk quota stroke super levy scenario that we had for 30 years?
That's sort of in the discussion and has been touted, I suppose, over the last week. But I suppose we would have to say also that when we hear from Glanbia, the question is around a relatively short-term issue, hopefully. The one thing I would say on that, Damien, is that, you know, for some farms, and I think we have to remember this, that we're now sort of 5 years into post-quota situation. We do have to remember that the dairy industry in Ireland was constrained to the tune of about 30 years. So there was 30 years of stagnation, really. So the last 5 years we've seen in growth, which has been beneficial to the rural economy, that has come on the back of 30 years of being static. And it is an interesting thing when you think about it, that dairy cow numbers in the country now, believe it or not, are about the same as they were in the early to mid-1980s. So we're back almost to where we were rather than having this massive jump in expansion overall. So you have to take a long-term view on the scale of expansion that we talk about. But one final point maybe on it in terms of the environmental impact, it is important to remember also that if we maintain a system that is pasture-based, that is less reliant on conserved or imported feeds, if we produce less milk indoors, we can reduce our ammonia emissions. The more milk we can produce from pasture, the more beneficial it can be for the environment. So, you know, I think that the disruption of our grass-fed, our grass-based system is, you know, that could be counterproductive, actually, when it comes to looking at the environmental issues around dairy farming.
All right. Very interesting indeed, and a great analysis there, Joe Patton of Chagas. Thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
Thank you, Damien. Thank you.
Right, from dairying to sheep farming, and I often wonder why spring lamb is in so much demand at this time of the year. Suzanne Campbell, good morning to you. You've been having a look at this.
I have been having a look at it indeed, Damien. We've seen the prices for lamb, really, and sheep meat grow in Ireland. You know, and actually since 2019, the prices have increased by 10% for farmers. So this is great. And I suppose, what is spring lamb, this lamb that's touted all over the place that we should be eating around Easter time? It is a traditional food. So what does that term mean? And it really means lambs that were born in this calendar year. Now, some of them might have been born a little earlier than that, maybe in December, but they're basically killed at between 3 and 5 months old. And they're big, hefty lambs. Now, they're not this little small, cute thing you see in the fields or on posts. postcards, you know, you're looking at about 40, between 40 and 43, 44 kilos. I mean, this week we saw one there on Farming Twitter, and I know you follow Farming Twitter, Damien. It's absolutely brilliant for prices, etc. There was a 42 kilo spring lamb sold at Ennis Gorthy Mart for €188, which is a huge price. So lamb is at record price. So why is this? You know, and especially because we know that lamb has experienced the loss of food service. Restaurants and hotels have closed, but it's still very much demand in Europe and in further afield. And in fact, even domestically, in terms of we're all eating at home these days, the volume and the price sales volume of lamb has actually increased in Ireland. So more of us are buying and eating lamb. So I talked to earlier this week to farmer Amy Jackson. She's in North Tipperary. She farms with her husband Ross, and they have a mixed organic farm of sheep and oats and barley. They keep about 150 ewes, mainly Border Leicester crosses, and they're in the middle of lambing at the moment. So I asked her, is she feeling the benefit of these good prices and demand?
I think we've been quite lucky that we have sold most of our lamb organically for the past few years through Irish Country Meats in Camolin in Wexford. And just last year, then we started selling directly to customers. And so we've called ourselves Laca Organic Lamb. And that went much better than we would have imagined. We thought maybe we would aim to sell about 20 or so privately, but they all went that way last year. And yes, it has been a really strong year for lamb last year, and we're seeing really high prices as well at the moment now. It's quite exciting, really. We're hoping that that'll continue for the rest of the year.
So what's a day like lambing?
It's busy. So we get up and, well, actually through the night, I suppose, we check the sheep every 2 hours through the night. We have a CCTV camera set up in the sheep shed, so we just log onto our phones, check the camera, and hopefully roll over and go back to sleep. Then when we get up, we go out first thing, check all the lambs in the individual pens are healthy, give meal and silage and water to all the animals. And then really it's a daily routine of moving on ewes with young lambs from the individual pens into a bigger creche. We have creches in the shed where we let the lambs get a little bit stronger before we put them outdoors, mucking out the individual pens, hopefully having time to allow those to dry before we add some lime to them and bed them up again ready for the next new mum. Mm-hmm. And then they get fed again in the evening. So that's the cycle really. And then keeping a very close eye for any TLC cases.
You and your husband have, if you like, regular jobs as well off farm. Obviously you're probably working at home and everything, but you're lambing around your other work, I presume.
Yeah, so we're literally working every minute of the day at the moment. And then, you know, sometimes our other work has to be done after hours as such, you know, so maybe 9 p.m. until midnight, we might grab some time for ourselves at a computer and then do the lambing dishes, the bottles and any stomach tubes or anything like that that we've had to use throughout the day, and head to bed and then check the cameras, and then it all starts again the next day. So it only lasts a few weeks, but it's a crazy time on a farm. It's very, very busy.
Can I just add also that Amy and Ross have young children? So it slightly makes your head spin, Damien, listening to that daily routine, even without children being thrown into it. Of the lambs that we produce in Ireland on farms like Amy's, we export about 70% of them. And in past decades, lamb consumption in Europe had been falling, and it had been an older profile, the customer for lamb. But Ireland has been part of a marketing programme to kind of direct sales at younger consumers in Europe and in Ireland as well. But why is the price so high? This is a key issue. And it's a bit like that container ship that's stuck in the Suez at the moment. Global trade is so interconnected, and what happens in another contact affects prices here really quickly. Seamus McMenamin from Bord Bia explains this situation to me.
Yeah, we probably export about 60 to 70% of the sheep meat that we produce. It's been a very strong market this year, I suppose, just in terms of there's been tighter global supplies for sheep meat, and the volume of product being imported by Europe from New Zealand in particular has been at its lowest level in decades. So that's translated then into a very strong demand for Irish lamb.
I know farmers in Ireland and in Britain have often complained about New Zealand sheep meat coming on the market here. Why is there less of that coming into Europe now?
There were production difficulties in New Zealand, which contributed to, first of all, a lower lamb crop. And then they have redirected a lot of what they have exported to China. China imported, I think, 75% of what New Zealand exported last year. So in terms of, New Zealand have a quota for what they can export to Europe. And last year, they imported less than 50% of that. So it's been the lowest in decades. So the redirection of all that lamb off the global market into China has sort of then freed up opportunities then for us on the European market, because obviously there's a shortage of lamb. And then to add to that, then the EU production of lamb has declined last year. And then with Brexit and the UK leaving the trading bloc, there was a notable decline in exports from the UK to the EU last year as well. And that's created a lot of opportunities for Irish exporters. And then that's been translated back then into the quite strong prices that we've seen over the last 12 months.
I mean, is it something that price will last and are farmers encouraged to have confidence in it?
Yeah, well, I suppose there's quotes this morning of 7.30 to 7.50 cent a kilo for August, which is just at record levels. It has been driven a lot by tight supplies. There would have been a lot of lambs killed earlier last year with the good weather and quite firm prices. So there was a lower carryover of hoggets into this year. And then the increased optimism in the sheep sector has meant as well that there's been an increase in the number of ewe lambs that have been sort of kept for breeding. And then on top of that, there's less lambs being imported from Northern Ireland for direct slaughter. So it's overall the kill is running about 7 or 8% behind where it was in previous years. And this is what's contributing to the high price. It's just competition for those available.
And it seems the demand here for lamb is also getting higher, and also really happily, I think, among younger consumers. Butcher Pat Whelan, he's of the James Whelan Butcher Outlets, took me through why spring lamb is so special and why it's reaching those new consumers.
Spring lamb would be typically 3 to 5 months old, and it's a much smaller carcass. The taste from the spring lamb is more subtle. It's very tender, and the colour is much paler than it would be as the animal matures or develops into a greater age. In the same way as we eat turkey at Christmas, there tends to be that traditional approach to eating lamb at Easter. So you have a huge demand at Easter for this particular meat.
It had, I suppose, been associated with an older customer. Is that changing? Do you find in your business younger people getting into lamb?
I think there is, and I think a lot of it is how the butcher presents the product. I think the traditional approach would have been to roast the leg, whereas now you're seeing butterfly cuts, which are suitable for barbecuing. So traditionally, we would have roasted the leg and grilled the chops, whereas now, you know, kebab, lamb burgers, koftas, butterfly legs of lamb, and so on and so forth, complete with noisettes and different ways of presenting it. That's introducing it to a different customer, a newer customer, a younger customer. And it's a beautiful meat. And I think anybody who develops the taste for it, it's special and it's unique.
What would you recommend this Easter for any of us to prepare? What would be your favourite treatment of it?
The rack of lamb is just something that I really enjoy myself. I don't like it overcooked. And I think it's something that's quite simple to prepare and very, very easy to cook.
It's not even 9 o'clock and I'm already looking forward to eating a bit of lamb later on. Suzanne, thanks a million for that. And that was Pat Whelan ending that report there. All right, that's all we have time for this week on Countrywide. Today's programme was produced by Eileen Herron. Brian Moss was our broadcast coordinator and Pather Carney was in sound. Coming up after the 9 news here on Radio 1 is Playback. Marty Morrissey will be keeping you company here for the next couple of weeks. So until I talk to you again, bye-bye and thanks for listening.
Countrywide on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Farmers Journal. Have you cattle to sell? Find out what they're worth with our Mart Price Calculator on farmersjournal.ie.